Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
It's a great question, isn't it? You know, what influences your game model? And obviously really excited, another opportunity for anyone listening, not only to, you know, share ideas, we want it to be interactive. We don't want it to just be me and Yas talking back and forth, you know. So if you've got any questions or comments, anything, feel free to share. And it is part of the FACPD series as well. So if you're looking to add some accredited points to your fan profile, this is a great opportunity. I'm curious for you, Yas, how have you found it? You know, what influences your game model?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, to be honest with you, I've often thought about this. And, you know, I think obviously we've spoken in the past about game models, how relevant I think personally they are. I've actually got a slightly different view on it. I think for me, I have, if you like, a way of playing that I want the teams to operate in, typically out of possession. In possession, it's a bit more free-flowing, open, very much based on the game principles and responding to the game. You know, my trusted friend, Bruce Lee, and his phrase, my technique is in response to your technique, is one that's really kind of stuck with me. And it's I think it's a big influence in terms of how I look at the game as a general thing. But yeah, it's probably easier to go to you on this one in terms of obviously, you know, from your own personal stance and obviously what that looks like for you in the club that you're working in as well in terms of a game model. Out of possession, then a lot of freedom in possession. So yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are.
This is where, what influences your game model? Well, I think there's several ways we can go on this. Probably one of the biggest to answer is your experience as a coach, because we have biases, right? So we have our own biases based on where we are in our journey. So if you'd have asked me, obviously the way our coach has evolved, and I've always really wanted teams to be exciting, effective possession-based teams that are intentional with possession, but they have the ability where they can be unpredictable and operate within a framework. So we have our principles that underpin our game model, like we discussed last episode. But then how that looks for the players is how they interact with the game. Now, if you'd have asked me 10 years ago, probably would look different, right? And I think that's an interesting part. It's like, where are you on your journey? Because you have your biases. I've spoke to coaches on this exact question, like you'll have. We have it on the courses, and they're like, here's my game model, here's my principles. And I often say to them, well, is that fixed or is that flexible? Because there's some that are very much, and there's no necessarily right or wrong, but this is how I want to play. And the reason why I ask that question of is it fixed or is it flexible is because surely it relates to the players you have. And I know you just alluded to that, right, Yaz? So it's, I watched the game last night. I'm not trying to, you know, oversell it, but I've got to mention it. So I went to Miami, played Sporting KC last night, Arrowhead. Record attendance, over 72,000 people. It's a big attendance, especially in KC soccer history, one of the largest in MLS history. This is Messi, who's not at his peak powers, right? And I'm telling you now, as you can imagine, watching Messi play, it was incredible. His intelligence, his movement, how he's drifting into spaces, and just his influence on the game, whether it's with disguised passes, whether it's, I mean, he's just intelligent. It's overall amazing. Now, if you have Messi on your team and you have this player and that player, does that change your game model? Yeah, surely. And we talked about this before, didn't we, Yaz, on the webinar? I think you mentioned it about Guardiola at Man City and how it's changed. He's going to adapt slightly, having Erling Haaland as a number nine versus perhaps other forwards in the past. So I think there's several ways we can go on this, and I have several responses. But one of the first things I'm thinking about is, well, who are the players you've got at your disposal? Surely that influences your game model, because can we create something that allows our players to flourish? So if we've got certain profiles of a player, that's surely going to have an influence on how we play. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you're spot on. I mean, for me, it's definitely a case of looking at who's in my team. But then, you know, then it begs the question as well, do we really have a game model? We just have a preferred way of, like, you know, wanting to play. It's a conversation I have with coaches all the time. Like, even if you move away from the game model, because you're talking about coaching sessions, right, and you've got themes and whatnot, well, your themes are fundamentally linked to how you want to play. And how you want to play is effectively linked to, obviously, the game model. But the thing that we can't compromise on is that the theme and the game model are fundamentally, in my opinion, at least anyway, they don't come before the principles of the game. Now, if you want to play out from the back, fantastic. But if I drop in deep and tell my team to play in a low block, you're going to have to respond to that. So is there really a game model other than responding to the game? And, you know, like my friend Bruce Lee says, my technique is in response to your technique. But here's the preferred way we like to play. Here's what we're comfortable doing. Here's what we work on. But fundamentally, as a coach, whether in a development environment or first team environment, I need to be certain that my players have an understanding of the principles of the game, in which case we're trying to penetrate. Does that make sense?
1,000%. So the model is there for us to understand the game, isn't it? I think for us to create a framework to describe how we want to players to behave. At least that's how I see it. So we're trying to influence player behavior. Now, the principles of play don't change, do they? Because the principles exist in every game, regardless of what our preference is. I think the challenge is obviously how, exactly as you said, I mean, if we look at the game itself, my technique is in response to yours, that quote you use. Well, that's exactly it. It's that perception-action coupling. It's, I act in order to perceive and I perceive in order to act. If we recognise that the game is unpredictable and we don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, I'm using an example last night because it's fresh in my mind, where Messi's got the ball and within three touches, he's put the ball in the back of the net. Now, everyone could probably think he's likely going to do something in this area of the field, but there was times where he's getting the ball and he's playing a disguised pass for not even a third man run, like a fourth or a fifth man that's going from a completely different area. How has he seen that pass? But he's also had to change his decision based on how the environment's changed. So, yes, we can have our principles. So that example I've given there, whether it's a finishing the attack or whether it's, you know, you talk about penetration, whether it's breaking lines to advance the ball forward, whatever the principle are, that's our model, but what influences it is how the players bring it to life. And how do the players bring our game to life? And I think there has to be that flexibility, doesn't there? So then probably a better question is, how do coaches get better at creating environments that allow players to play, make those decisions within a game, right? Because it's, you know, if we're recognising that players' strengths, profiles of a player are an influence, well, how are we creating an environment, whether that be our game plan, whether that be our tactics, that allows the principles and our game model to come to life, right? Because ultimately the game plan of, you know, like we had it today, our teams are in a few finals today. Sometimes we've had to change our tactics to deal with the opposition's powers. In other cases, we feel like our powers are a little bit stronger. We've got more weapons, so we can do things differently. What's your thoughts on that, Yaz? You know, how are coaches doing that?
Yeah, I think it's a good one. I think fundamentally, I don't think that, you know, at least from my experiences observing a lot of coaches, I don't think there's enough of that even being considered. I think the bottom line is, before you can do anything, you need to really understand the principles. I remember having a conversation with a coach recently, and he was telling me about his principles. And I'm thinking, yeah, but the game doesn't care about your principles. The game is based on a set of principles which already exist, because it's an invasion game, right? And I think we always have to go back to that. And the sooner we accept and understand that, the sooner we can start building out, well, what do those principles look like in my team? And that fundamentally informs what our game model looks like, right? So it's not, I'm not going to penetrate. No, you will have to penetrate. But the question is, how do you want to do it? And more specifically, what does that look like? When does it look like that? How does it look when it does look like that? And when does it not look like that, fundamentally leading us to the what ifs, right? So what? This is how I want to do it. Okay, brilliant. That's how you want to do it. But what, again, going back to that phrase, technique, in response to technique, it's what is the opposition doing that's going to allow your game model, if that's the way you want to play, preferably, to exist? So as an example, if I want to play in behind the defence, but the opposition are playing a low block, well, I can't necessarily play in behind the defence. So I'm going to have to do something different. That's going to have to be the what if you like. So I think fundamentally, it's getting the understanding of the principles, understanding what has to be in place to allow your preferable method to exist, and then understanding, well, what happens when that doesn't exist in the game, and potentially A, how you're going to respond to it by doing something different, or B, what you're going to have to do to create the situation for it to exist again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Tony, I know you've got some great insights, your journey, different roles. What's your thoughts on this in general, either what's been said so far or even just what influences your game model? I'd be curious to hear.
Yeah, evening, everybody. I think that I thought I'd try and jump in early because I've got a few bits and pieces to do with getting the wife sorted out, ready for bed and all that rubbish that impacts my life these days. The biggest thing was something that you both already touched on, and it's what players have you got. It's all very well having this theoretical model of how you want to play the game, but so few of us have the luxury of, I guess, unrestricted, unlimited recruitment, where we get to pick and choose the players that can then implement whatever our theoretical game model is. And the other side of it is, it's all very, I think that having a game model and sticking rigidly to it almost really depends on the opposition. The opposition do not want to, they might have their own game model, which completely disrupts any preconceived ideas about how you want today's game to go. I started this season with one particular formation because I thought it would best suit our players and allow us to impact games. And it was great while we were doing well. But then I think that the players stopped believing in it when results started to go the other way a little bit. So we now looked at changing into a different formation, which gave us a bit more of a foothold in the game. So my game model, if you like, went out the window after half a dozen games, because all of a sudden the opposition weren't allowing us to play the way that we wanted to play.
Well, that's it, isn't it? So if you've got, like we talk about, we want to build our attack from whether it's the goalkeeper, our back players, or we want to press high. But what if the opposition don't play short? What if they just bypass the midfield? Everything they do, they just boot it long, boot it down the outside. Not, and it might not even be a game, or it might just be just that's how they're coached, or that's how the players want to play. Or even like for us, we're trying to play out, but it's just not. What? How do you adapt? I'd be curious. What strategies do you change your plan mid-game? Do you how do you approach each game really to bring that out?
I think the first thing is that although we play the same teams maybe once, you know, twice a season, it's not as this the JPL that we play in now isn't as organised, maybe as structured as the way that you do it over there in the States now. You know, you've been used to the system over here of firstly grassroots football where there's no scouting of the opposition. You might know one or two players. The JPL, you know, we certainly don't look to scout opposition, even in academy football. When our scouts were going out, they were looking at players rather than systems, or it was only if we had maybe a high profile game coming up where we would send someone to look at the opposition to see how they played. And I would think that that's the general consensus over here. So as a coach, you've got to be A, knowledgeable enough to change your plans on the hoof, and hopefully your players are being coached in a way that, you know, we play 4-20, so I guess it's easier to make those interventions where we might say, right, well, we're going to do this, but after 20 minutes, we can actually swap that and go to something else. But at the same time, I've got to have educated those players in both System A and System B.
No, that's it, isn't it? It's interesting, because I still remember, like, Rochdale, it would be 4-20s, or it'd be, I mean, there'd be times where we'd do our interventions and plan our coach interactions there, and there'd be some adapting on the fly. Every now and then, like, if we knew we were playing Burnley or we were playing Preston North End or whatever, like, certain teams, Oldham, there'd be certain ways that we know, and I'm sure it was the same with you when you were at Rotherham, there'd be some clubs where, and Doncaster, you know you're playing against a Bradford or whatever, you've got a rough idea of what they're likely going to do, and you might talk about it. At least that's what, you know, we'd know we were playing against certain clubs, and we're like, they're not possession. They're just going to fight every ball. Every ball's going to be a fight. It's going to be aggressive, and we're going to have to deal with that as a challenge. And then, as you say, like, I remember if it was an FA Youth Cup match, or I still remember being at Bristol, it was, you know, we played in the Premier League Floodlit Cup or something like that. It might be different. You try and do some analysis and prep. Over here, we're luxury that a lot of the, even at the grassroots levels, everyone has VO. You know, a lot of teams are recording the games. Some are silly enough to put it on YouTube or whatever. There's always ways to get access to information or know somebody who's seen the game or some kind of footage, whether that's at college level, pro, semi-pro, grassroots, very good youth, like ECNL, GA, MPL levels. So a lot of the teams will have a vague idea. So we're actually able to, I mean, if anything, it forces us to talk to our staff and sort of say, look, don't worry too much about the opposition. Let them worry about you. But we'll obviously know that we're playing in certain games, you know, and you get a feel for it. You know, if you're playing certain teams within the academy affiliate and how they play, like Sporting Corvalley in here, they're very, very good possession-wise, very good aggressive. They're going to pressure, they're going to be aggressive off the ball. And you know what type of situation, what typically you're going to see when they play the ball in wide areas. They like to exploit wide spaces. Whereas if we play against a Legends team, it's all 1v1s, it's all, everyone's a show pony, and they're just going to do tricks and flicks and step overs and it's all that type. It was like watching Brazilian soccer schools back in the day. And if we play against another team, like Oklahoma teams, because again, what soccer looked like in Oklahoma, and it's interesting, right? And we played a team today from Oklahoma, and it's different. compared to if you play a team and you're traveling nationally to, from California, whatever. So it's fascinating. That's why I love it. I think the game is growing so much, isn't it? And it puts a greater need on us as coaches to, you know, how we not make sure we don't complicate it for the players and we don't put fear in them, but we definitely utilize these environments to you know, create really meaningful experiences. So I take our 2012s as an example. They're not talking about the opposition, one of the girls' teams, but I watched them the other day. They're in the classroom, they're doing video, and they're just reviewing our principles. So going back to the game model, they're watching clips and they're talking about moments, what could they have done better when we've got the ball here? Look at where we've given the ball away on this press. What if we, if these players make these type of runs, how does that allow us to break the press? And we talked a lot about what we could do. We try to link it and tie it back to the week to then focus on those principles in the match, irrespective of whoever we're playing. But it's interesting, right? So I love it. I think it's great. Sorry, Yaz, you got your hand up.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think there's some great points been made there. And I think I was having this conversation with some coaches today and it just reminded me that obviously when you're working in academies and when you're working in, you know, in a quote-unquote elite space, you know, you probably do have a bit more of an insight on what opposition teams are doing. But actually, the reality is when you come to grassroots football, you don't assume that, you know, based on what a team did last time playing around, that, you know, you're going to know what they're going to do this time, because on paper, it's the same team. But in theory, it might be a completely different set of group of players, which is less likely to happen, obviously, at the academy levels and anything beyond that, right? So I think just throwing that in there as a consideration and linking it back into what influences your game, well, fundamentally, your players and your opposition players is what influences it. And, you know, so Tony hit the nail on the head with that as well, in that, you know, if you might want to play a certain way, but if you haven't got the players to do it, and even at the top of the call, you mentioned there about the reference that we had about Pep Guardiola. Look, you didn't have Erling Haaland in there before. Now you do. Now you've got to play differently. Now you've still got some foundations in how you want to do things, but your options are different. Your options are going to be limited or expanded by the number of players you have and their capabilities, right? So it's really understanding those pieces there. What else could influence your game? How have you been coached? What coaches are you around? What are you getting observations and insights on in terms of what works and what doesn't work? You know, I think we went through a phase where all of a sudden everyone wanted to play a back three. It's like, okay, well, where's that come from? And how's that influencing your game model? Because you might still want to play a certain way. And I guess the question I throw back at you is your game model linked into your formations and your systems and strategies, or is actually the game model more about how you want to play rather than how it's going to look as a setup, as a base setup, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think it's a great point, because we can often get so bogged down on formations and systems. I think too often they do. To me, it comes back to the principles, because yes, things will look different if you're playing with a back three, a back four, whatever, back five when you're defending or whatever it may be. But ultimately, really, we've got to look at, there's a difference between formation and animation. So obviously, formation is the start position. Not the...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Set position. So we might set up in a certain structure, a certain shape, but in animation that can change. So when we've got the ball, coming back to Tony's point, how do you play against, you know, in animation it might look 2-3, 2-3-5 or 3-2-5 or whatever. It might look, you know, I mean, I'm looking at our 7-a-side team today. I was buzzing, because centre back's just gone into midfield and he's kept his run. We're controlling possession. We're not trying to treat him like the, you know, pro game and it looks like the adult game. We're just letting them play. They've got a shape, but mate, what basically looked like one at the back, and why not? And we went 1v1 at the back because we were confident, and in the end the opposition couldn't leave anyone up top because they were too worried about what we were doing, just because we had better powers and we were comfortable on the ball. So it ended up looking like one with a keeper's out the box anyway, one centre back right in their half, and then everyone else is pushed on. Now, if you were to look at your formation on paper, it would be a 2 3-1, right? A 1-2-3-1, seven aside. But it didn't look like that in animation. Now, to me, your game model, I look at it different. I think I look, and it doesn't mean this is right or wrong. I'm looking at it as maybe alluding to what your question was, as is it how you play? And I'm thinking more that really formations now, if we can actually coach players to understand our shape when we've got the ball and when we haven't got the ball, but really we get them to make really good decisions. We create environments that give them problems, give them choices, decisions to make, problems to solve. Well, then that's going to be based on principles. Do I make that press here? Do I not? Do I pass that ball there or do I not? Because everything has a consequence. If I go and jump on that trigger, what's the consequence if I don't win the ball, right? And then we're out of shape. If we're putting them in environments like that, it's that you're developing those decisions. And now I think it's how you bring your principles to life, right? And that can operate in any formation. So it's not restrictive by a formation per se. And I do think that's probably like a shift in thought where you used to hear those rumors and myths years and years ago, like Ajax, they all play 4-3-3. So we must do the same every age group. You know, I've worked for clubs where the manager was convinced the first team is 4-3-3. So that must mean the youth team will do different formations, but typically 4-3-3. And then right the way down to the youngest age groups, it's all a variation of 4-3-3. So in one of the age groups, it used to be a 2-3-2-1 at nine aside to look like a 4-3-3 shape, right? Well, my thing there is like, but what if you've got... So this comes back to your first question. I think Tony mentioned it as well. What if you've got two really good centre forwards? What if you've got more wingers? What if you've got really good players that need to play in a midfield two instead of a midfield three as a unit? So can you create a shape that allows you to get the players on the pitch and understand their game and develop their confidence versus we have a predetermined shape which then eliminates players from playing in that shape? Actually, it should be, you know, let's coach the principles, but we don't have a pre-preferenced formation. It should be, well, what's the best shape that gets the best out of these players that I'm working with? Because there's been some teams I've coached where it's like, we can't play a back four. It's just not going to work. And you might think technically you need to be better to play a back three. But I've had teams where we've just had some really good defenders and the profiles we've had out wide suited more playing with three at the back. So that's what I did. And it got the best out of the team. You know, so it just depends, doesn't it? Johnny, you're in.
Evening, lads. How are we? All good.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Just thinking of the question and the role I'm in the now, what influences a game model? I love your feedback. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of talk about pitch size. So our home ground is 102 metres long and 69 metres wide. The alternative venue we use, an academy, a high school, is sort of 20 metres shorter and almost the same in width. So does width and pitch size impact anyone's model?
Johnny, I think it's a bloody brilliant question. And fundamentally, yes, it does, because it will affect what you can and can't do. But I think what, to an extent, it will. But I think the better thing to go back to and remind what Gerald said is if we start by focusing on the game principles and get our players to understand those, it allows them to become more fluid in identifying and solving the problems that exist in the game. And beyond that, you then start to recognise, okay, well, what are the limitations? What are the things that will allow this circumstance to exist? So it then becomes somewhat, especially when it comes to the match day situation, apologies, outside of small-sided games, there's still going to be opportunities for everything that takes place, because obviously there's regulations to match day pitches, right? So there's a possibility of all those things still occurring. It's just if you can understand the principles and you're better at understanding when and where and potentially how you might go about doing these things, regardless of the pitch size. But it also allows you to recognise, in my opinion at least, that if the players understand the principles, then they're better at understanding when certain things might take place on different areas and different sizes, whether that be because the pitches are set up differently, or whether that be because the opposition are positioned and set up in a particular way. So I think it's a great question. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that, Gerard.
No, I think it's interesting because ultimately everything's a constraint. I still remember, I'm sure Tony does, we used to play before Dan Machichi went to England with the YDP phase, and he did that, and then obviously he was at Arsenal for a bit and what have you. Dan used to be basically like head of coach and assistant academy manager, whatever. He was like the number two at MK Dons. And I still remember playing games there, and there'd be some crazy pitches, a bit like when we used to go to United, as Paul will tell you, and there'd be different games formats. There'd be games with like short but wide fields, long and narrow fields, games with mini goals on, or games with one large goal and then the opposite end mini goals, and different constraints and channels, different numbers. And that has an influence on how you play, 100%. It just gives players different game problems. It was the same when we used to play down at MK Dons. I know some teams didn't used to like it. I loved it because we weren't training on that, but then you'd come on a narrow field and it's like, well, this is a long and narrow field. The spaces are now wide. It's going to force more duels. We're definitely in contact with each other more. How are we attacking centrally and playing in behind? What are we going to do? So I think it's great. And again, could we take that idea and that concept into training and adapt it that way as well?
So Joe, just on that then, I mean, it's got me thinking, you know, Johnny's question. Have you ever thought about what an ideal pitch space might be for your game model to really operate in? Or really function in, rather?
It's a great question. I actually haven't. I'd be lying if I said I had. I haven't thought about it. I thought it was interesting watching the match last night because I've had to convert a pitch. Arrowhead, if anyone knows what Arrowhead is, it's where the Chiefs play. So it's obviously an American football stadium. And they've had to modify that. It was interesting where the corner flag was. There was like no space to take the kick because you're right up against the wall. It's a different size field. I think for me, I like playing on wide fields. I like playing on really wide pitches because I think typically how we want to play and that we want to dominate and control possession, circulate the ball to create gaps that you can exploit. So you can play through people. Well, in order to break that block or draw people out, how are you playing around? So play around to play through. So probably wider spaces, I'd say, if I was to think about it. But I've never given it much thought, but it's definitely a great question, right? Because I love watching, like Peter does it. Peter has certain lines drawn on the field to influence how he wants our team to play. When we've got the ball, when we're defending, there's like reference points for Jake Davis and basically a lot of the back four, but and Remy as well, who's like a six at times, to know where they need to be as a reference point in certain moments within the game. And we've all seen, I'm sure we've all seen the social media ones that have done the rounds, right? Where you've seen Guardiola's pitches, he's got the half spaces or other fields. So I think they're different examples, aren't there, that you can use.
Think you might have hit the mute button there, mate.
Oh, just now, yeah. Did you catch my last bit? Where so there are different examples you can use where, again, you have different markings, field markings on the field. That was my last point. Probably similar to what we've seen with Guardiola. And I was saying Peter Vermees at Sporting does that a lot, where he'll have reference points, referencing certain areas of the field and where people can be in certain moments of the game. Whether that be when we're defending or offensive transition or whatever. So I think that's another consideration, isn't it, for coaches?
Yeah, most definitely. So I guess, you know, from your perspective then, top influences on game model, what are they for you?
Players that you're working with, who's in front of us, your environment, so the weather, the day, the context. Is a big one, right? And by context, I mean, there's so much that can go into that, right? The environment, the pressure, situations, scenario. There's a lot that you can talk about. but that has a huge influence on behaviour and how you respond. I think coach experiences, their knowledge, their background, so all that type of stuff, I'd say.
So for the, you know, just a quick one on that then, for those that missed it last week, how would you break down where coaches need to start with their game model? Because I'm starting to think about some of those influences you've just mentioned. One of the biggest ones, considerations, being the level of coach experiences and their insights around the game. And more specifically, those that are probably earlier on in their journeys, as Tony quite rightly said, probably going to have, I say early on in the journey, but with those working at a lower level, probably going to have less consideration around being able to bring necessarily the right players in, if you like. What are some of the considerations there around where you begin to start with this process?
Well, I think watching the game is a good start, isn't it? You know, actually getting to know the game and studying the game, I think is where you need to be, because there's a lot we can learn just from watching the game and different levels of the game. And I think talking to people, really, and just noticing, this is my bias, I would say, to anyone. Obviously, I've worked in different countries, right? And I've seen football, soccer, wherever you're from, in the US, in the UK, in Africa. There's different ways. You know, Ghana is very different to Morocco, and it's very different to the United States, and it's very different to an England, and it's very different to a France, and it's very different to so on. So I think understanding the cultural piece, if you actually, as a coach, because a lot of people don't realise football, the levels, right? And, you know, Tony referenced the JPL, and there's other levels back in England, grassroots. But even for the parents, a lot of the parents don't really know what's out there, and certainly over here in the US, I would say there's some that really do, but there's some that think their kids are amazing and they're playing in the division whatever at the grassroots, and they don't realize that there's other tiers to this, right? And I think just going out, you know, if you're in the US, going into another state, going into watch different competitions, if you're in England, going into another country, just traveling and just seeing different parts and how they view the game, doing coach education with different national governing bodies. I think that's a great start. You know, and a lot of it now, you're lucky, there's a lot of stuff online. Obviously, we've got platform You Learnably, we've got the podcast where, with the Coaches Network, you know, your podcast, you're speaking to people, aren't you? From different places, different journeys. That's what I would encourage anyone to do. Because I think, you know, to assume that we know everything and only have the experiences that you might have in England, let's say, or the US or whatever, it's limiting to some degree. So don't be scared to go and view the game in other areas, because you're gonna see stuff that will change you. It'll change you. It'll change you as a person, never mind just how you coach. It'll change you in just how you view the world, life and everything.
Go for it, Tony.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back on, it touches on a little bit of what you were saying there. I remember working at one club where what influenced the game model, if you like, was what we were being told to do. With it, Gerard was talking about Ajax, and I've heard the same, you know, stories about the first team play 4-3-3, so everybody's going to play 4-3-3. And we ended up having quite an in-depth discussion with a first team manager at one of the clubs I worked at, and he was saying, "Well, you know, this is going to be our style of play. This is what we're going to do. We want everybody to do that." And we had to convince him, if you like, that that wasn't necessarily the best way of developing players, because that's what our job as academy coaches was, is to develop players. Because, and this is the kind of the bit of the discussion that you didn't really like to have with him. We had to say to him, "Well, look, by the time these under-16s that are now going into scholarships get to the first team, the reality is you might not be here. So you play 4-3-3 now and you want us to teach 4-3-3. But what happens if you get sacked in the next 2 years? These kids are ready for the first team and the next manager plays 4-4-2 with a diamond or plays three at the back." So in terms of what influences your game model, you might have your, you know, and this is a discussion that I've had with coaches that I've employed. They come into the club with this philosophy of the way that they want to play football. Well, actually, it's not you that's playing. You know, we'd all love to play like Man City play, the reality is that's not the environment that you live in. Oh, Man United, yes, I know. But that's not the environment that you work in. You work in an environment, we're giving you a certain set of parameters, a certain set of players. We're gonna change formation every 12 weeks, whether you like it or not, because at least that way we can play three different formations over the season. I used to hate playing with one up front because, for the very reasons that Gerard mentioned earlier on. We had two or three good strikers in our team. So how do you get the maximum out of what you've got? You have to have a certain amount of flexibility. And if someone is... Gerard, you'll be able to say whether this is right or not. If you've got a TD in charge of your club who says, this is our philosophy, but that some of the teams that are underneath that TD don't have the players to implement that philosophy, who benefits?
1,000%. Couldn't have said it any better. I think that's often the trouble, isn't it? We have, not trying to be rude, but sometimes we get these people come in and they try and reinvent the wheel, change everything. Everyone's jumping to that tune, but actually they're not going to be around anyway. And then the ones that are, you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, you had some unbelievable, but I still remember the Rotherham. I mean, you had Alex Kouamba. You had a lot of lads that have played, that have gone on, played for some of the biggest Cat Ones in the country. You've had players that have played some really good football, you know, back in the Rotherham days, I remember. You know, it's how do you create an environment that gets them on the pitch, you know? No, I think you're spot on, Tony.
Gerard, it's probably a perfect time just to remind everyone this is an FA accredited CPD session that we're running here. Gerard, you want to just share some insights on how people can access that and the steps taken for that?
I'm going to share a link with everyone after this. Now that we're wrapping up, I'm going to share a link with everyone for the self-reflection form. And if you're looking to get some CPD points, you just complete that. What were your key takeaways? And that'll be added onto your fan profile. Just make sure that you have the right fan number and you're good to go.
Awesome. And it's great to see some yeah. new faces in the room as well. So what I'll also be doing shortly is I'll be sharing a link for you guys to join a community group where you're going to get regular updates on any of the events or BPD stuff that me and Gerard are going to be doing. But honestly, it's, you know, so great to see so many new faces in here constantly every single week. I think we're picking up at least a couple new ones. But Gerard, you know, just as we look to wrap up then, top takeaways for you?
I think just really reflecting on who's in front of us, who are the players. I think Tony's point right there is spot on. And just going back to, like, does this fit the environment that we're in? Is this going to get the best out of all the group of players that we're working with? So that's a huge one. And again, this is part of an FA series that we're doing, webinar at the end of the month. So, you know, for those who are looking to be a part of that webinar series as well, where there's an extra 2 hours CPD accredited, it's a great opportunity.
100%. And, you know, massive thank you again, Johnny, for your questions and your insights. And, you know, some really good questions, to be fair. And Tony, your participation tonight as well. But guys, I think final one for me, just to build on it. Stay curious, you know, start challenging yourself. Why are you doing things the way you're doing it? What's actually influencing? When, you know, when are we maybe being too rigid with what we're doing? Sometimes the game is just the game. We just got to respond to it. And that's not just in relation to your game model, but pretty much everything that we do with the players as well. But no, Gerard, another great evening tonight. I really appreciate your time as well, man.
Love it as always, mate. It's great. Great to see some quality in the room. And just, again, you spot on. Stay curious.
Definitely. Final one, guys. If you know, please make sure you're following us. Please share the spaces. You can always listen back to it. And just regarding the CPD in particular, just to give some clarity, CPD hours be processed at the end of the month. So you've got, in theory, till the end of the month to get the CPD bits done. It'll only take 2 or 3 minutes, as Gerard said, around the link that he shared in the group already. But I've just shared a link as well, so you can join a WhatsApp community group that we're putting together just to get these spaces out to you more regularly, and just so that you're aware of what's coming up in the next few weeks and months. So we've got some great stuff coming up. But again, massive thank you to everyone tonight, whether you've been participating in the conversation by getting involved or just listening. Don't be afraid to get in touch. Don't be afraid to share some thoughts and insights on the questions and the insights that have been shared. And let us know what you want to hear in the future. Until next time, guys, take care. Have a great evening.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.